Right. Mr. Kempner, can you speak to the amendment?
Yes. So the amendment is to require a treatment level of 20 parts per trillion, which is the drinking water threshold. And that would certainly eliminate the department's concerns about rulemaking and the workload for the department to develop that would be established in the bill. I guess I would just note that generally speaking, wastewater treatment facilities are not required to treat any pollutant to the drinking water standard, because discharge limits through in statute allow for some reasonable opportunity for dilution and diffusion with the receiving water. That being said, the one facility that we've dealt with so far, the Anson-Madison Sanitary District, they're the ones that are kind of leading the charge on this. They are moving ahead with an engineering firm to design and potentially construct a PFAS treatment facility at their municipal or district-owned wastewater facility. We met with them several weeks ago at their request because they wanted to know how they would be regulated at this point in time. There are no EPA ambient criteria yet. And from a regulatory standpoint, it's quite difficult for us to be able to advise them on what limits they would need to meet in this new facility they're building. So we discussed that quite intensely in the department. And then we met with Anson-Madison and their representatives, and we talked through the issue. And ultimately, the guidance we gave them is in this interim period before EPA establishes their ambient criteria, which is what we always use to establish permit limits at treatment plants, we advise them that in the interim, they should meet the 20 part per trillion threshold, because that was the only threshold we really have at the time. There's fish tissue action levels, which are hard to translate at this point back into permit limits, but there is the designated use of drinking water for waters of the state, and there is this interim threshold of 20 parts per trillion. So we told them conservatively and prudently, we're advising them to design for 20 parts per trillion. That was a lot less than what they thought they would need to do. And there are implications to that level of treatment in terms of the design of the facility. There's a lot, given the different technologies that could be used for this particular facility, it means they need to treat much more of the wastewater at a higher level. It likely means there will be much more change out of the filter media and more to be disposed of, and a cost difference from what they had originally entailed. So moving forward, we don't envision that wastewater discharges would be limited at that 20 part per trillion threshold. It would be based on EPA's ambient criteria. That's the allowable concentration in the receiving water to protect aquatic life and to protect human health. And then we work backwards from there, looking at all of the discharges along the river shed to ensure that those concentrations are not exceeded. And we have to create an allocation essentially amongst all of those discharges to establish end of pipe limits so that interim standard is not, or that ambient threshold is not exceeded. So the 20 parts per trillion, I would say, is a fairly conservative standard. One thing to consider is if, I guess there's two potentials. EPA is going to be developing their own criteria, it sounds like, for landfills. That's not certain, but it seems to be the direction they're headed. If EPA develops a standard that's more stringent than 20, which is possible, then the landfills or treatment plants would need to go back and do more. If they establish something that's less stringent, then potentially more money was spent on the construction of the treatment system than was needed. So that's kind of the dilemma of moving forward previous to EPA, is you don't know where they're ultimately going to end up, and it could be more or less stringent, and there's probably financial or technical implications to that potentially.
Representative has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Kavanaugh. So there's three aspects to all of this. It's assessment of the what is the problem of PFAS in our environment currently, and then what are the limitations that should be, what assessment of the limitations should be, And the third thing, which I don't understand as much, is we mentioned the technology. You know, there's a lot of, so the only, is there really an established technology that will work for removing PFAS, or is it in development, or are there options? Where are we at with that? And if someone could go a little more deeply into what is the technology that will remediate PFAS pollution, I would like to know a little bit more about it. Is it bioremediation? Is it filtration? What exactly is it?
Let me just pause for a second. So can we keep that specifically to technology that would treat leachate? Because that's your question could get broad in terms of how we remediate PFAS. So Mr. Kavanaugh, perhaps you could address that specifically for leachate.
Sure. First, I'll say I am no expert in this. This is an evolving science, an evolving engineering. There are treatment technologies that are in use around the world. I can just tell you what I've learned from talking to the engineers for the Ensign Madison project. Generally speaking, it's some sort of advanced treatment that would use activated carbon or different types of resin materials as a final filtration. And there's other pretreatment steps prior to that also potentially. You know, some of it has to do with the characteristics of the what you're treating, whether it's leachate or wastewater, how bad that may be, different PFAS that exist in that, how clean that is to begin with in terms of solids. The more solids that are in the wastewater, the more chains out you'll need on your back end. So it's a complex and evolving science, and I would expect over the next several years it's going to evolve further. And I would also say it takes a great deal of expertise to design these, and there's probably not a lot of facility or engineers that are really focused on this to a high degree at this point. There are some, but not a great many.
Representative Gerlach.
Thank you, Senator, and thank you, Mr. Kavanaugh, for coming and for your testimony. I don't think that anybody on this committee or anybody listening needs to be reminded of how terrible PFAS is. One only needs to look at the testimony of Mr. Fred Stone and his farm to understand the severe implications that PFAS has. I am not convinced that waiting for the Environmental Protection Agency to address this is going to help to remediate any of this. And if we know that PFAS is so terrible and that it is in leachate, and you've identified that you don't think that the tenets of what Representative Ziegler outlined in his bill is the right approach, what then is the right approach? Because I don't feel that we can continue to kick the football down the line any longer. The time is now to address this, particularly for our Indigenous peoples who rely on sustenance fishing in the Penobscot River. It's well over time that we address this, and I'm curious what would then be the right approach.
The department's position is the right approach is to allow EPA to do their work, establish the appropriate standards. They're working on standards that may be specific to landfills, which would be a pretreatment standard. That would be a technology-based limit. And they're also working on developing the ambient criteria, which would serve as our basis to limit all. So we realize that waiting is disagreeable to many, but we think that is the right approach. That's the approach that's been in place for decades for all sorts of toxics that EPA has regulated successfully, and we have regulated successfully all of our toxics criteria, and we have well over 100 in our rule come from EPA. We rely on them for the science, and we adopt their science and implement those. And despite the waiting period, which seems untenable, that is our recommendation as probably the best path forward.
Follow up if I may, Chair. I presume that's a yes.
Yes, please.
thank you very much. I understand the department's position, Mr. Kavanaugh, but we have been reminded continuously that waiting for the federal government to address many of these issues, which impact not only the state of Maine, but the country in terms of not only just PFAS, but other toxins, has not always been the right approach. And I think it's incumbent on the state of Maine to lead, as states have had to do over the years when addressing these issues. I think waiting for the EPA to come up with standards when we have the capacity to do that, and we've done that in other issues relative to PFAS, I just can't seem to understand why we would not want to move in that direction. So I guess that's more of a statement rather than a question, but I'll look forward to working this through more in the work session. Thank you.
Representative Ziegler.
Yes, thanks. And thank you for being here, Mr. Kavanaugh. I want to echo, Representative Gramlich's concerns. Other states are working towards this because we can't wait for the EPA. I'm sorry, the time frame is really getting longer and longer as they want to deal with this. We have a possibility of dealing with this now, and I think we should move forward with it. You know, generally speaking, more and more landfills are going to be receiving leachate, or are going to be receiving PFAS within their soils and so forth that are coming there for after treatment. So we need to start with the state run Juniper Ridge and develop data and the ability to then deal with all of this. All this soil, this contaminated soil. So I think we should start. Other states are starting, and they're not waiting for the EPA. And I think this is a chance. We remove the financial part of the for the DEP. And I think in discussions with Anson Madison, I think we should move forward at this point. Thank you.
Isn't that so, Representative Ziegler? You're muted.
I think I asked a question in there about the other states, but maybe I didn't, but it isn't that so.
Yeah, I would love to hear about other states that have work going on around leachates, your colleagues in other spaces. If you have any information about that, either now or perhaps for the work session, that would be helpful.
We can provide that at work session.
Thank you. Senator Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand and appreciate some of the aspects of your testimony, Mr. Kavanaugh, but the fact of the matter is the Environmental Protection Agency at the federal level walked this issue for years. It hasn't been until the last couple of years that they've actually attended to this at all. And to rely on them to do our job is, I think, also untenable. And I would encourage you strongly to take some of your legitimate concerns about the implementation of this bill and work proactively to try to make it work in a way that you think will work better because will address some of those issues. But we, at the very least, rather than just putting off this entire issue until the EPA does or does not meet their action plan that they promulgated, I think, 2 years ago, I think that we should plan our own actions and then integrate whatever they come up with into those rather than just sit back and wait. There's a reason this is before an emergency session. Now, admittedly, not every bill that we will hear even today is necessarily what I would constitute an emergency. This one is. And, you know, we work for the Maine legislature. We're all Maine legislators. You work for the Maine Department of Environmental Protection. So I would encourage you strongly to move in that direction. I don't have a question. I have a statement. And my question is, please come back for the work session with something that works for you. Thank you.
Representative Dudera.
Thank you. Mr. Kavanaugh, I have to echo the words of my colleagues. And You know, the fact is, you look on the EPA site, they haven't updated their PFAS report for a year. And in your own testimony, I just want to find it here, where you say, criteria to protect aquatic life is scheduled for the winter of 2022. So that's a year from now. Criteria to protect human health are scheduled for the fall of 2024. That's just crazy. We know how this is affecting people. We know how it's affecting our environment. And I would think it must be very tough for you to also be in this kind of a waiting, holding position. So I would hope that we can iron out something that works for our main DEP and get working on this. Thanks.
Okay. I recognize that our committee has strong feelings about PFAS. And so I'm appreciative of hearing all of your thoughts, committee members, but I want to redirect us in the form of questions towards our folks that are here testifying, if you don't mind. Are there any further questions for Mr. Kavanaugh? Mr. Kavanaugh, I have a question for you. Are there other examples of where the state has more stringent environmental regulations than the EPA?
I think maybe one area was with dioxin years ago, where we came up with our own approach of an above and below test in terms of levels of dioxin in fish. That was a fairly Maine specific approach, I believe. In terms of other toxics, though, generally, I would say we've always adopted EPA's criteria. You know, we apply a Maine specific, the human health criteria based on certain assumptions of drinking so much water from the receiving water and eating so much fish from the receiving water. And then we apply our own state specific fish consumption limits, which are higher than EPA's recommendations. So while we adopt EPA's underlying science, we do modify them to be Maine specific with Maine fish consumption rates, which makes them more stringent. But I can't think of other toxics where we've where we're more stringent than EPA's other than the dioxin issue. But we can look into that more.
And is it unrealistic to think that we might set something now and then reevaluate it once all of those EPA regulations come back to decide whether or not it works for us or whether or not our own levels work for us?
Sure, certainly that can be done. I mean, you could reevaluate the number at a later date once EPA establishes theirs. I guess just one point to consider is if there's engineering and construction which has occurred, that it may or may not be sufficient to meet the new criteria, or it may be more than what was necessary. You know, I can tell you just from the one project we're dealing with, the Anson-Madison Sanitary District, they're at a cost of about $3.5 million for what they're looking at. That's a kind of a small to medium-sized POTW. I don't have any cost for what it would take for pretreatment at a landfill. But that just gives you some ballpark, at least for the one project in Maine, it's about $3.5 million for what they're looking at.
And when leachate is tested, is it a third party that's testing it? Is it the landfill itself that's testing it? How is it the DEP that's testing it? Who, what lab is running that test? And what's that? What is that? Can you tell me a little bit about that process?
Sure. That's really being managed by our Bureau of Remediation and Waste Management, but I believe under LD 1600, the landfills are required to sample their leachate, send them to an approved laboratory, and we're collecting and analyzing all of that data. We can get you more information on that at work session if you want more details on how that's working.
Representative Dudera.
Thank you. My question for Mr. Kavanaugh is, aren't our air radon levels more stringent than the EPA? I believe the EPA is 4 PCLs, and in Maine, it is 2 for indoor air radon, something that I unfortunately deal with quite a bit in real estate. Thanks.
I'm not familiar with that. I couldn't say.
All right. Are there any further questions for Mr. Kavanaugh? Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.